Hello and welcome to Heartland Hypnosis Radio. I'm your host, Ray Lytle, and I am honored to be joined by one of the more well-known stage hypnotists in the world. It is Sailesh. Welcome to the show. How are you, Sailesh?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good. You know, you're a busy guy. How many shows a year do you do?
Around 200 or so.
Wow. I mean, that's every week you're out doing something somewhere.
Pretty much. I try to work as much as I can. And, you know, you take your down times when you can get it. But then again, you know, you always want to work some more.
All right, let's go back. Let's look at Sailesh. You were born where?
I was born in the Fiji Islands.
Oh, you're born in the Fiji Islands. Okay.
Yeah, I was born in the Fiji Islands. I was raised in Canada from the age of 4. Right through.
Started
my career in Canada.
Your parents were from Canada or Fiji, or give me a little background there.
They're from Fiji. We, you know, my ancestors from India, about 3 generations in Fiji, and then immigrated to Canada for a better life, I guess. You know, a bunch of immigrants trying to make it for themselves, and my parents, you know, did right by me and my sisters, and raised us well, and we've been able to flourish in North America.
So you lived in Canada, and you went to what, high school, college, all. What was your education?
Yeah, just all the way through, right through college. Pretty much all done in Calgary, Alberta. And while I was in college, ended up doing some stand-up comedy, meeting a hypnotist, opening for him. He asked me to go on the road with him. And while I was on the road with him for a 30-day tour, he gets in this huge argument with his sound guy, DJ. And they get into a big verbal fight. And the next thing I know, they disappear for about an hour and a half. When he comes back, the hypnotist, the DJ's missing. And I'm like, where'd he go? And he goes, I put him on a bus, sent him home. Can you DJ for me?
So you're saying that you were stand-up comedy, you got into comedy, and you're opening for a hypnotist, and he had a fight with the sound guy and fired him.
And, you know, it was basically like get in the car. And, I mean, there's language I can't use on the radio, but, you know, it got pretty heated, and I just, you know, just kept my mouth shut and just stayed in the hotel room wondering what was going on. An hour and a half later, he's back, the hypnotist's back, the DJ's long gone, and he's like, I fired him, can you DJ for me?
And now you're promoted now you're the DJ, or the sound guy.
Now I'm the sound guy, and then by the time we finished that 30-day tour, he's like, you know, do you want to be my road manager? And, you know, at the age of 20, I jumped at it.
That was my question, was what was your age? You're 20 years old when this is going on, okay.
Yeah,
and the tour. Years old when the tour was of Canada.
Yeah, this was Canada. So I spent about 2 years with him, traveling back and forth, coast to coast, 17 times from coast to coast.
Wow! At what part of being his road manager for a stage hypnotist? What part did you start thinking, you know, I'd like to learn that? I mean, was it during this time?
Never.
Really?
No. So the way it ended up working out was, being his road manager meant basically being his lackey, doing all the driving, setting up the sound. I wrote a lot of his material, you know, throughout just being, you know, being creative, doing stand-up. So during that time, 4 different people had paid him to be taught hypnosis.
Okay.
And he wouldn't teach me, but I had to be there for all the teachings and everything else. And, you know, probably the most well-known person that he taught was Anthony Cools.
Okay.
So, you know, I sat there with Anthony Cools for weeks on end, having to listen to everything, having to go through inductions, and making this hypnotist look good. And I guess I absorbed it, you know, 4 times over. Never thought I'd ever use it. So while I was on the road, I kind of figured out what I wanted to do with my life, and that was to work in the restaurant, nightclub industry, and I had made friends with people on the road, And one of them had offered me a job saying, whenever you want to come off the road, you know, there's always a job for you. You know, I like your personality. I think you'd be perfect for this. Called him up a few months later and said, you know, are you serious about this? And he goes, yep. He goes, when can you start? I said, give me a couple months. And sure enough, I left the hypnotist, started working, started from zero, from being his doorman to being his busboy to being his a waiter, bartender, and worked my way up to a management position. So one night while we're doing cash out, one of the staff was like, hey, you used to work for a hypnotist. Can you hypnotize somebody? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think I know how. I just never done it.
So have you ever tried an induction or anything at this point?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. So I do an induction with about five of the staff, hypnotize three of them, make them do foolish things. They think it's the coolest thing in the world. So the following Saturday, it's cash out again. And, waiting around for the waitresses to count their money because they're getting their money counts wrong every time. And we do it again. And it became a weekly thing for the staff to do. And the owner came one night to the show or to the night going like, you know, what's going on? You guys aren't even clocking out till 5 a.m. You know, what are you guys doing? I said, we're just having some fun. So he saw it. He was doing a fundraiser. A few weeks later and said, well, I'm going to get rid of the band that I've hired and you're actually going to be a headliner for my fundraiser.
So no official training. I mean, I guess you've had stand-up training, but and all of a sudden you're an entertainer and you're the headliner of some sort of charitable event and he's telling you to hypnotize people. That's hysterical.
So that's how I started off, and then all of a sudden it became a weekly thing at my bar to do. So I did a show every Sunday except for one for 77 weeks in a row.
Wow. I mean, that's one way to get good at it. That is if you want to get good at it, having a show every week is a way to do it.
Well, having a show every week in the same bar, so the same people were coming out, bringing new friends. And so you had to come up with new material all the time.
See, did you being a stand up? You probably knew how to write and be entertaining. Was it a lot of comedy?
I was writing for the hypnotist. You know, for a year and a half before that. Okay. So,
you were a writer, which helps. I mean, because you have the discipline and the ability to force yourself, hey, I'm going to come up with this new material for, you know, every show and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so my goal was to do 10 skits that I've done before and come up with 10 new ones every show.
Wow. I mean, that's lofty.
It was, but, I mean, it worked out. And after you know, doing the same show, for weeks on end, other bars around the area started hearing about me. So eventually I had three or four shows a week in different bars every week.
Wow.
Yeah.
And your shows at this point, I mean, being a stand-up, are they mostly, it's mostly hypnosis? Is it mostly, are you doing some stand-up in there? What are you doing? Because there is a difference,
all hypnosis,
you know.
And improv.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there was even a point where I would just have people yell out an action word, and I'd have to come up with a skit right then and there on it.
See, that's real advanced. I mean, that's advanced entertainment there, to do something. And there's a certain bravery with that. I mean, you've got to be brave to trust yourself to keep it entertaining. Because even doing radio, I mean, I've done, you know, radio for way too many years. But there's even when you don't plan a show and you're flying by the seat of your pants, which is which has happened, you know, those nights you stay up too late or whatever, it's dangerous. And it's a certain bravery that you need in order to pull that off.
It is. But I mean, I kept it structured. I always had a certain amount of skits that I would always do. And, you know, a few that I knew that I would always do that was sort of trademarked as my skits or my originals. And then, you know, you sort of fill in between. So you made sure that, you know, you didn't add five improv skits back to back to back to back.
Right.
You'd throw one in and there, and then, you know, even with the words they said or they wrote it down, you know, I'd go back to it and maybe go through two or three skits and try to figure out something to do with that word in my head at the time.
Could you do just stand up again? I mean, after, you know, so many, and I'm just bouncing ahead. I'll get back, but I'm saying, just for my own curiosity, could you go back and just do stand up, or are you too far removed from it?
I think I'm a little bit too far removed from it. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of improv in my shows, and I'll come up with funny one liners and things like that. And I think that's what keeps my show fresh.
Right.
Is I still use those aspects of it, but to actually do, you know, a 10 or 15 minute set, or, you know, I don't think I'd ever be able to do a 45 minute set or an hour set.
Yeah, it's hard. It is. I'm impressed by stand-up comedians and stage hypnotists. I think it is. I love entertainment, but I think those are two of the hardest forms of entertainment that anyone can do. And it's weird when you meet, you know, there's a few of you guys out there that have a great mesh, that have a really good sense of humor and also are stage hypnotists. But it is shocking how many guys out there who are doing stage hypnotism don't have that, you know, haven't really ever done it. Would you recommend to, say, someone listening to this who's young and wanting to get into it, or maybe old, just wanting to get in, would you recommend to do a couple nights, do an open mic night at a stand-up, or at least try it, or is that something that you would say, I mean, stay away from?
To give it a try, but, I mean, what I would say more so is do, like, something like the Second City writing courses, yeah, and the improv courses, things that keep you sharp.
Like, I taught Michael DeShalit was on the show. Michael DeShalit was on the show a couple days ago, and he was a magician who fell into it. You know what I mean? So there is sort of a natural progression from magician to hypnotist, or stand up comic to hypnotist. At least in my mind, I could see it happening. I'm shocked by how many guys have no knowledge of that. I mean, you're saying a Second City or any kind of improv group like that would be a great introduction, or a great way to get into entertainment and eventually fall into
hypnotism.
Well,
a great way to get into entertainment, or actually a great way to expand your writing ability, mm-hmm, your creativeness, being on stage. Yeah, and actually the majority of the hypnotists in the college market are ex-magicians. I kind of have a joke about it, because when people come up to me and go, well, can you do some magic before the show to warm up the crowd? And I'm like, no, sorry, I'm not a failed magician. All I know is hypnosis.
It is funny because, DeShalit described himself as a failed magician. You know, it is funny that you say that. But I find that the funnier, mentalism. Now there's a whole people coming out that are hypnotists and mentalists together. That seems to be one of the new trends as well. But I think that, yeah, you just from an entertainment aspect, it's you're still performing, having some kind of education in one of those fields, whether it be improv, stand up, magic, whatever it is, something that lets you know about performing as well as the hypnotism when you get into being a stage hypnotist. I am shocked when I see the amount of people who don't have any background in that.
Well, I mean, it's okay not to have a background in it, but my thing is get on stage, keep performing.
Yeah.
This is one of those things. This is probably the only craft that you can do that you actually have to be on stage to perform to get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with magic, with mentalism, with all that other kind of stuff, singing, anything like that, you have practice sessions, you have jam sessions, you can stand in front of a mirror as a magician and practice the trick, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of hours before you even show the first person. With hypnosis, the only thing you can do is perform.
Yeah. You're never going to know how someone reacts to you unless you're working with someone to see how they react to you.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it may be funny in your head. I mean, everything I ever think of, to me, is funny in my head.
Right.
But when you execute it, you're like, ooh, maybe I should never do that one again.
Well, but would you, being in the world of stand-up, you've got that discipline. I mean, you know, a stand-up has to go, if anyone out there listening has ever seen any of these well-known stand-up, you ever seen Chris Rock working on a set when he goes to a club? it's late at night, and he's trying out new jokes. There's not nonstop laughter. He's working on his material. There's the practice. It's sort of that same way.
And he will show up to a club and not even be announced, and all of a sudden you see him on stage on a regular, you know, Wednesday or Thursday night. He just wants to try out his new material. Mm-hmm. Most of these people that have these TV specials and they're doing these huge shows, they practice and tried their material at unknown clubs over and over and over again to get down their patter. Mm-hmm. And everything else. And just like with hypnosis, it takes time to develop a pattern, or you might have something fun in your head that's just not executing properly, but you have to do it over and over and over again. But with hypnosis, you have to do it on a stage.
Yeah, and you have to have people that are hypnotized, that you are working, you know what I mean, that you are trying these on, and you also have to have an audience, because if the audience doesn't think it's funny or doesn't think it's entertaining, you know, that's one of those bits is going to have to go away. It is. So you're in your 20s, you're managing this club, and you're doing 77 shows in a row. How do you get, you know, how do you start deciding you're going to do shows at other places other than the club you work?
Well, we started getting phone calls at the club I was at, and they were like, well, we hear you have this hypnotist, you know, how do we find him? Well, he's one of my managers. No, seriously, how do we get a hold of him? Well, just call back here. You know, tonight he'll be working, and that's how it developed.
So you start booking. You start booking yourself.
It was word of mouth. It was before internet and everything else. And actually, the funniest story about it was, so I had actually done four shows in a row, four Sundays in a row, and after the fourth Sunday, I had left. You know, going to work on Monday for my regular shift, and my general manager, the owner of the place, said, you know, we're canceling the rest of the shows this week, or for the next few weeks. I just want to do it once a month. I don't want it to be overkill.
Oh,
this
wow.
is ridiculous. You know, what you got is amazing, but, you know, I don't want to kill it. I want this to be a novelty, and we'll just do it once a month. You know, I was kind of a little bit discouraged, but I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. You're the boss. So I took off on a Sunday, and this is, you know, 1994, you know, really before anybody had cell phones or anything like that, or great cell service. And I took off for the Sunday night. And I get home at like 2 in the morning, and my answer machine just lit up. There's 26 messages from the bar. And I also ran the security for the bar, so I thought there must have been a huge fight.
Yep. You know, police were involved, yeah.
Yeah, I call and go, and he's like, where the hell are you? And I'm like, well, you told me the show was canceled. I went out of town. You know, I actually went camping, so I had no cell service, nothing at all. And he's like, we had 400 people show up.
Oh, my God.
I go, what do you mean? He goes, there were people really pissed at me because they had driven 50, 60 miles because friends told friends about the show. And we noticed it was getting bigger and bigger every time. And he goes, I had to buy people free drinks, promise them that the show is going to be next week. So you're going to be here next week. And I did a show there. You know, every week after that. That was the one week I missed.
I'll be darned. So
that's how it snowballed. And this was before internet or anything else. So it was all word of mouth.
I'm saying at this point, you got to be thinking, you have to be thinking, all right, I might be good at this. Right? I mean, you got to be thinking, I might be onto something. You know, if people are going out of their way to see me, I must be good at this.
Well, I was kind of in awe. Like, I mean, you'd have people make comments, or, you know, somebody that once called me a phenom, and I was like, you know, thanks, but I don't think so. I'm just having fun, and I still didn't think this was going to be a career. This was just fun, and then all of a sudden I was making more money doing two or three part-time shows than I was working a 60-hour week.
So people started booking you to do shows other than your club. They're like, hey, come on over to, you know, come on. I don't know any Alberta either. Oh, come on over to Edmonton. Come on over to Edmonton and do a show, blah, 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 you know.
And that was basically it.
And so you started, that's when you started traveling?
I started in the Toronto area because I moved out to Ontario.
Okay.
And so the first year, it was just all Ontario-based shows. And
but Toronto's so big. It's such a big city There's probably a lot of areas to do shows. I mean, a lot of, you know, clubs that you can do shows at.
Yeah, and especially back then, there were. Back then, you know, each bar had, you know, three or four busy nights. It's not like the way it is now where, you know, a bar is lucky to have two busy nights, an entire weekend.
They compete with internet now, you know.
Yeah, it's all internet now, all the entertainment's through internet. So, yeah, it was the right time, the right place, that kind of thing. I don't know if you know, I could recreate that now.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, you're talking to someone in radio. Trust me, I remember before internet and how good things were. It, you know, times changed. But really good entertainment has continued on. You're living proof. I mean, when you look at the shows you do now, is that when you started doing colleges? Was it just, did someone see you or did you go to one of these conventions? How did you end up getting into colleges?
No, most of it was, pretty much all bar and nightclub. Okay. And then I sort of moved on. My next step was I had friends of mine that would ask me for help.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I did it backwards. I started doing shows, kind of only knew what I was taught or what I had watched or what I had read upon. And all of a sudden, people were asking me for help for weight loss, for stop smoking.
Oh, really? Okay, you know. that kind of help. I thought they were asking you for help on how to do a show. So you've never, I want to backtrack. You've never, at this point, you hadn't had any, there was no NGH training. You weren't even certified with any of the organizations or?
No, wasn't certified. Actually, when I had approached some of the organizations, they had shunned me away because I was known as the dirty hypnotist.
Yeah, you were just the hypnotist with the dirty jokes, and you were playing bars and blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Yeah. So eventually when friends of mine started asking me for help, I wanted to help them, so I went to the American Institute of Hypnotherapy.
Okay.
Did their course, and, you know, all of a sudden they saw me as a golden child because I was doing probably back then 280 shows.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But just to do that many shows without any kind of formal training is really amazing.
It is, and, you know, I wouldn't recommend it.
And you're in your 20s when this is happening.
Oh, yeah.
Which is even more amazing.
23 at the time.
That's amazing. So you finally decide, and you decide, hey, I want to help my friend stop smoking or lose weight, whatever it is. So you go and get some actual training. Yeah. And then is that when you start helping friends? Or, you know, did you
start helping friends and, you know, sort of doing some therapeutic stuff? And it just started growing from there. And then I wanted to travel across Canada, which I'd already done, you know, working for somebody. And so I used some old contacts and got my foot in the door and worked with some agents that I'd met before. And so I did that for about 6-7 years. And then I wanted to expand down to the States. And I had my manager found a college booking agency that picked me up.
Okay. Cause it's when,
and so that's how I came down to the States.
Because you started getting really big fame. I mean, the whole MTV and that stuff was, you were how many years into it before you started getting some global recognition?
About six, seven into it. And then all of a sudden I was invited out to Iceland, did a show there. And I always say that, you know, I was world famous in Iceland because, I mean, I had rock star status because of the way they promoted me. I mean, I couldn't believe that people were paying $45, $50 a ticket to see me, and I was selling out this venue, this theater of 1,200 people 4 nights in a row.
Well, it is. You are, you know, and even today, you are you're a good-looking guy. There's an exotic sort of you know what I mean? You have a look that not everyone possesses. You know what I mean? And you're in shape. You're not just there's still something different about you that is appealing. And I think that because you look at college kids relate to you, but their parents also relate to you. That is in all seriousness, that's a very hard thing for entertainers to do. You usually, you know, you've only got usually one demographic that likes you. You have that unique ability because you're sort of ageless in how you look. You know what I mean? Maybe it's the shaved head or whatever, but I'm just saying, you really can't get, you can look at most people and say, oh, all right, that guy's, you know, I know that guy's 60 years old. I know that guy is, you know, like you look at Jim Wan, who is fantastic, but you look at Jim, you can't really guess his age, but you can look at him and you say, all right, I know he's got some years on him. But there's nobody in their 20s that are going, oh, I know that guy is near my age. You, for some reason, have that ability to where people don't automatically guess the age, and I think that's a good thing. It's a good thing in entertainment.
Oh, it's a great thing in entertainment. I mean, it's funny because with college kids, they assume I'm no more than 10 years older than them.
Yeah,
and then I can be in front of people in their 30s, and I'm about the same age or a couple years older than them, and I'll be around people in my 40s, and they're like, okay, you're about my age or just a bit younger than me.
Yeah. And they, but that's so, such a good that's yeah. a good thing to have. I mean,
oh, it's a great thing to have. I'm not complaining about it. I mean, I thought I'd age out, but I would look at someone like Jim Wan, who's, you know, like one of the godfathers of doing the college market, and definitely paved the way for a lot of us. You know, but I look at him and, you know, at his age, and he's still relevant the market. And I thought, well, hey, here, I have a chance. But I figured I was going to go on cruise control about 6-7 years ago and just say, hey, you know, I can be kind of like a Jim Wan.
Yeah.
You know, develop those relationships, go back to the schools year after year. Because there are times where I will call up schools or have my office will call up schools, and they're like, oh, we have Jim. We've had him for 30-some-odd years. He's been here 6 predecessors before me. Give us a call when he retires or dies.
It is weird because Jim Wan he's performed for students and their parents that went to the same school. It's that. And by the way, I was not taking any kind of shot at Jim Wan whatsoever. I think he's fantastic.
No.
But
no,
I was pointing out that you look at Jim and you can tell that he is experienced of a certain age. He's not going to pass for someone in their late 20s. That was the only reason I was bringing it up, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I mean, I could respect that about Jim and everything else. But again, you know, I thought I'd kind of age myself out, and it was time for the next generation to come on board and kind of take over.
Yeah, I don't think there's any limit. Just like Jim, I think you can be doing it well into, you know, for many, many more years if you so desire. You got – when did – I know that you were – MTV said something really nice about you. Did they make – did they name you entertainer of the year, college –
They – MTV named me the best hypnotist on the planet.
Okay. How did that come about?
I had a video that went viral. It was before YouTube and everything else.
Okay.
And, I mean, I wish I had control of that video because it was – from Iceland. It was in Icelandic. This was back in 2005.
Okay.
And it was a video that went completely viral, 54 million hits. It crashed their website.
Wow.
But nobody knew how to get a hold of me because everything was written in Icelandic.
Oh, wow. I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. So then FHM magazine, which is kind of like Maxim.
Right.
The way Maxim used to be here in the States. FHM magazine called me the number one download in the world.
How crazy.
That year. Yeah, so it was amazing. So it opened up like a dozen European doors for me.
So when people finally realized, this is this guy, this is how we get hold of him, that's when you're getting offers from all over Europe.
Yeah, and that's when I got offers all from all over Europe. And with me, the college market and learning the college market and was kind of my next step, because this has become basically my bread and butter. I do about 110, 120 college shows a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and it pays well, and the venues don't change. You know, the people do.
Yeah.
The people that come and see you, they do. And which has kind of been amazing. So, you know, I have relationships with places that have brought me in for 15 years in a row.
Wow. Does college size matter? Is there do you have a thing like, oh, I only like the Big Ten. I like the Big Ten schools the best, or I like the Ivy League schools the best. Does that matter? Are there some really small schools that are fantastic?
I mean, sometimes there's shows that are just too big. you know, it's harder to be in front of 2,500 people.
Really?
Than it is, yeah, 300 or 400, because so many people want to volunteer, and it's, you know, I mean, it's controlled chaos, but to have 2,500 people, that's a lot harder to control. I mean, my favorite number is, you know, anywhere from that 400 to 800.
Right.
Soft seater, you know, that's a great range, because there are times with 2,500 students, I might have 500 students that want to volunteer.
Yeah, how do you determine who gets on stage? You know, how do you figure out which ones are going to be the greatest subjects to do the show with?
Well, they choose and they volunteer, and there's 30 chairs on stage, and it's first come, first serve kind of thing. Whoever gets it.
Oh, really? So there's no...
There's no pre-induction, nothing like that. But my show has changed to... I mean, when I first learned how to do it, I thought it was 10, 15 minutes of pre-talk, and then a couple inducers, and then bring them on stage, and a 15-minute induction, and then here you go, we start. Now it's, you know, 3-4 minutes of pre-talk, a 3.5-4 minute induction, and let's go on with the show.
Yeah, I mean, there are some guys, and I think some of them are going to be at Heartland Hypnosis Conference, like Anthony Gailey's really quick. I mean, there are people that will, you know, in literally seconds, they can take someone, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, 0-60.
Brian Gilbert, who you're teaching a class with, he's really fast as well. I mean, it's amazing how quick some people are, you know, to become hypnotized. But it's amazing how some of you guys can hypnotize people.
Yeah, I mean, it's creating that presence, being, you know, it starts from everything, right from the second or even before you step on stage. You know, who does your intro, how your intro's done. You know, the second you step on stage.
Is that one of the hardest things for, like, young hypnotists who are just getting into it? Is that one of the hardest things for them to pick up is what you just said, which is it starts even earlier than you think. It starts from your introduction, the pre-show. Everything that they do on stage is working towards having that great show. And so many people take their introduction for granted. And
that creates an awe, you know, to begin with. You know, if you have certain things about what you've done, you know, who you perform for, where you perform, things that you've won, that all, you know, starts everything.
Yeah, there's a reason certain bands always
have that confidence.
Yeah.
And the second you open your mouth, and if you got that cool voice, or, you know, for some people, an amazing accent, whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
and you got that look, all those things help.
How important is, like, when you'll do a show and you go to a college, and you said kids are volunteering, and we know in hypnosis, it is important. Like if you really want to lose weight, you know, I can hypnotize you and help you lose weight, but you've got to really, really want to do it. How important is it for you when you do a show and you see a kid that really, really wants to be on stage? Like, how important is I want to be hypnotized to making them hypnotized?
Oh, I mean, that definitely helps. That's probably the second most, important person I look for is the ones that are really eager to do it and everything else. Sometimes people try a little bit too hard, but I always tell them it's like, you know, wanting to go to sleep
mm-hmm.
when you know you got to get up early in the morning. If you keep thinking about having to wake up early in the morning, you're not going to go to sleep.
Right.
The second you stop thinking about the clock or looking at the clock and going, oh my God, I only have 4 hours left, 3.5 hours left before I have to wake up. The second you stop thinking about it, you're done.
You're
asleep.
I was talking to William Mitchell about this. And William Mitchell, of course, you know, everybody knows William. He said something once that really caught – it just made sense to me. He said we were talking about this very subject. And he said, you know, when you're driving, you never mean to miss your exit. It's not like you're going, oh, I'm going to miss my exit today. You never say that. It just happens. And – because you're driving, and for whatever reason, you get this road hypnosis, you know what I mean? And you miss your exit, and then you go, oh, my God, what did I do? Miss the exit. It's that easy. And he described it is that? Sort of, you know, you're driving and you're just not thinking about it, and all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, somehow I drove miles longer than I thought I would. And I guess that's what we're talking about, right? I mean, you...
Our brainwave patterns go into it constantly. If you can compare it to something they can relate to, then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, I've been there. I've done it.
Yeah.
Because the biggest thing for most people is, oh, you can't hypnotize me, that, or that's for weak-minded people, or my mind's too strong for that. And then I tell them, you know what, you're right. If you say it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. I can't force your will. But if you tell yourself, I don't think this will work, but it just might.
Yeah, I used to work with a guy that was, he was such a great subject. And and we would have hypnotists come on to my radio show. I did a rock radio morning show for, you know, 20 years. And whenever the hypnotist came in, they were like, oh, we want to hypnotize Jimmy, because they had heard it. It was on our best of CDs of him being hypnotized. And I would ask him about it. And he said, and he goes, no, I just go with it. He goes, I let myself go. I want to be hypnotized for the show, but I let myself go. And he goes, and literally the next thing I remember, he says, I remember it when it's going, I know it when it's going on, but there's no thought. It's just you're going with it. And I thought that was a really, you know, because for a long time I wondered, at hosting the show, is this real? Is this really happening? Is he faking it? Like, I'm sure there are people that go to your show and wonder if the people on stage are faking it or if it's real, but he described it as me, as he goes, I sort of shut myself down and go with it, with whatever's happening, and next thing you know, the show's over.
Yeah, so people like Jimmy would be like my favorite people to be at a show, and you know, if there's somebody that's new and starting off, well, when I started off, I always asked, you know, how many people have seen hypnosis, how many people know what it is, how many people have been hypnotized before? And those would be the people that I'd want on my stage.
Yeah,
because they've already experienced it. If I had somebody come up to me before a show and go, oh my God, I get hypnotized all the time. Every time I'm a hypnotist, doesn't matter what, I'm always on stage or I'm always hypnotized. They're the first people I'd look for because they've already programmed their mind that they're getting hypnotized. It doesn't matter what I do, what I don't do, they're getting hypnotized.
And they have fun with it. Those are the people that you want. And college-age kids, man, there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm. There is. I mean, you know, luckily a lot of these grad nights and prom nights have hypnotists, and so some people experience it or they've at least seen it before.
Yeah, and they're
just
willing to try.
Absolutely amazing.
They're just willing to try anything and go with it. You know, it's one of the reasons that guys who specialize in college shows like you, I mean, that's one of the reasons they're so fun, is these kids are willing to go for it. Do you, the kind of humor that you put into your show, different for college-age kids as compared to, say, I own a big company. I own Pepsi, and I'm going to have some kind of company retreat, and I want to bring in entertainment. I'm going to hire Salish to come in and do a hypnosis act. How different is that show from the show you do for University of Florida?
Well, it depends. I mean, I allow... And shows have changed, especially with the college market, especially in the U.S., as of late, trying to be very politically correct.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Trying not to be homonormative, trying to be inclusive, getting away from, you know, certain reactions that you're looking for that might be considered homophobic.
You're right. That's definitely changed since, like, the 90s, for sure.
Oh, yeah, big time. So I've had to adjust and alter my show for that. Whereas corporate and actually even university colleges now, you got to be very mindful of that, where a nightclub show or a comedy club show is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
For corporate, you definitely have to be mindful of making sure the person doesn't embarrass themselves in front of their bosses or say something out of turn.
Yeah, with people now, they're super sensitive to homophobia, is one that you said. You know, when you talk about the 90s, you would see someone do an act where they get someone acting all effeminate or whatever, and that was the joke. Now, if there's ever even if there's anything humorous about that, the joke is the bigoted person who has a problem with it. Like, they have become the punchline and not the person, you know, who's acting effeminate or whatever it may be. That's a that's how the times have changed.
So, yeah, now for me, you know, back in the 90s and even early 2000s, you'd look at something where I'd get people of the same sex to dance with each other. And then you'd wake them up in the middle of the dance and they'd be like, oh, my God, why are you so close to me? And, you know, give each other a little push or a shove.
Right.
And the crowd would find that funny. Now, when I wake them up, I tell them that, you know, this may be the first and last time they've ever experienced something like this.
Yeah.
But they're going to realize the person that they were just so close to is one of their best friends, and they give them a big hug and hug it out.
Yeah. You see, it's...
Because you don't want that reaction anymore. And
yeah.
It's not cool anymore.
Yeah, you're right. And I see, like, I have a daughter who's in high school, and I think back to when I was in high school. Now, you know, we've changed. Sensibilities have changed. And I think it's changed for the better. But, I mean... It's just we try to put everyone on equal everybody's on equal ground, and we all treat people – we try to treat people with respect. And I think when it comes to hypnotism and when it comes to stand-up comedy and any type of public entertainment like that, you know, it's become an issue. And not everyone – not anyone of the old guard – not everyone is comfortable with it. Like some people, you know, I long for the old days when I could make fun of the gays, or I long for the old days when I could make fun of someone because they're from this part of the world or something. And mm-hmm. the new thing is, man, just get over that. And, you know, funny's funny, but we making fun of someone, you know, simply because of how they were born is no longer cool.
No, it's no longer cool. I mean, it's also an adjustment period too.
Yeah.
It's going to an absolute extreme right now, and there'll be a little bit of a bounce back. I mean, so I've even changed my wording a little bit, and sometimes people don't even realize it. I got called out for being heteronormative because I said "ladies and gentlemen."
Wow.
And
yes,
I didn't make it inclusive, but what they didn't realize is, I don't just say ladies and gentlemen. I say ladies and gentlemen, people on stage,
yeah,
or people in the audience. I add in the word people. They chose not to hear me say the word people and then called me heteronormative and you know, I shouldn't be invited back to their venue because I didn't make it inclusive of everybody. And I was like, rewatch the video.
Yeah.
You will notice I say people.
Well, and the thing is I think it comes from what's in your heart. And listen, I don't know you very well, but I've talked to you long enough. I'm not hearing anything from you that would make me believe that you know what I mean, that you're one of these people who believes, you know, blah blah blah. I think it's different when you have someone who in their heart they have a problem with I have a problem with people's gender issues, blah blah blah. And you have someone who simply just doesn't realize that there are other people taking it the wrong way. And I think if there's one thing with society, That's the part we're leaving out, is not everyone we assume is trying to be offensive in what they're doing. And we have to be aware that, like you said, times are changing. And there are some people who just aren't aware yet. They're uneducated is not – we should at least – is different from having hate in your heart. And I think it's
I like the word unaware.
Yeah.
They're just unaware that it's hurtful.
Right.
That it's you know, that it's just not cool anymore.
Is it changing the college market? Is it making it a little more difficult, or is it just for you? You have to have an awareness that anybody can be offended at any time.
I think, well, you got to be more aware, and you got to realize that, you know, there are people that, even though you don't think you're doing something wrong, may take it the wrong way, and at least be open to what they have to say. I mean, there will still be people at the extremes that will, no matter what you do, what you say, they're gonna be looking for it,
yeah,
and calling you out on it, and that will happen as well. But, you know,
so no,
be mindful.
No gender stuff, no gay stuff. Let me ask you: could you get away with doing a Trump joke at a college show?
I try to stay away from politics as much as possible. I mean, but it depends on where you are, what part of the country you are.
Right.
To make a joke is, I mean, a lot of it is okay because most college campuses are very liberal.
Right.
But I even try to stay away from it unless, you know, I'm doing UC Berkeley or something like that.
Yeah. Well, they want one. They would
a little bit easier.
UC Berkeley would demand you put some Trump jokes in. No, but I think, yeah, you know, this part of it is weird that we are at this time. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful that we are trying not to go out of our way to offend anybody. But I do think there's a problem with, you know, people being unaware and somehow confusing them with someone who has hate in their heart. That's something that's troubling. So you're doing college shows. Are you still doing bars and clubs, or is it just pretty much concerts and college shows?
Pretty much concerts, theaters, college shows. I'll do a few bars here and there. I got away from bars for my own personal reasons. I'd lost two nieces to a drunk driver.
Oh, wow.
And it was just hard after that to walk into a bar, be on stage, hold up a drink in the air, you know, get everybody cheers, have the bar owners push alcohol sales and, you know, walk away thinking, what if somebody leaves this establishment drunken because I put a drink up in the air and said, you know, cheers or sociable, you know, one too many times. So there's six bars I still do, but they all understand that I will not even drink on stage. I will not promote any drinking.
They
never asked me to.
Where do you call home now?
Bay Area, California.
Oh, you're in California, which that's a big change from Calgary, Alberta. I'll tell you that.
It is weather-wise, but
Well, that's what I mean, weather-wise. The people,
Yeah, it's very liberal around here. So, which I definitely like. I mean, there's a lot of open-minded. You know, there's both left and right. But at least they're open to other people's ideology.
To live in the Bay Area. I tell you, I'd probably root for the Oakland Athletics over the Giants, but I would love to live in the Bay Area. It looks like the weather, as you said, is wonderful. It seems like a great part of the country. You're playing, you know, 200 shows a year. You're probably not home. Every weekend, I imagine you're gone.
For the most part of it, I'll take the entire month of July and pretty much all of December and the first couple weeks of January off. That's my family time.
Right. Do you have children?
I got an 11-year-old son.
Oh boy. Okay.
And a beautiful wife that helps run my company. So I also own an agency that we book other artists in the college market.
Oh wow! So you've gotten so used to how to do it, you now book other people. Good for you. Are you just booking hypnotists, or are you booking other forms of entertainment as well?
No, a little bit of everything: speakers, magicians, musicians, comedians, spoken word. I like booking people that, you know, that kind of have a message that can do workshops.
I think,
you know,
it's fantastic.
Make that difference.
Are you booking any improv? Because you mentioned improv earlier. Is it?
We do have an improv group that's on our roster. But it seems that schools are going more to interactive, more variety. So magicians, hypnotists work really well. They're drawing in the crowds. You know, the one thing we noticed about the college market, especially in the last couple of years, is student cell phones. Getting them out of the dorm rooms is one of the hardest things. Most of their numbers are down for any other sort of entertainment except for things that are interactive or that an event that offers you free food.
That's true. How big is social media for anyone wanting to do a lot of college work?
It's huge. And I mean, if you ever want to come into the college market, it's a long game. It's definitely a long game. You can't just walk in there and expect to book a ton of shows. There's tons of great hypnotists in this market, but it just takes time, energy, effort, and endurance is probably one of the biggest things.
What is the, and I'm flying by some questions now, because I know we're almost out of time. What's the, of all the awards you've won, what's been the most prestigious?
I would say I'm the only artist to ever win Entertainer of the Year by two different organizations in the same year.
That's a good year.
And that was 2017, where all of a sudden 2017, I thought I passed my prime. I was just going to put myself in cruise control and, you know, book shows that I've normally booked and let somebody else take over. And then, you know, 2017, I won Hypnotist of the Year and Entertainer of the Year by two different organizations, and I just won Hypnotist of the Year again. It's the third time in 5 years, and you can't win consecutively. So
not bad. That's your Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man moment there. Because didn't Robert Downey Jr. get Iron Man when he was like 38 somewhere? He had gone past the young part of his career and was transitioning into, you know, and then boom, all of a sudden Iron Man hits. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what it is.
And you have been, this is something that I think is cool too, Heartland Hypnosis Radio. So, of course, people going to the Heartland Hypnosis Conference will listen to this, I'm sure. You have been a statement. This small conference, it started out as a small conference in St. Louis, and yet every year you were here, you know, teaching classes and helping people out. What do you like so much about Heartland Hypnosis Conference?
There are a bunch of things, and it starts right from William Mitchell, from the day I met him, and, you know, we created a bond and a friendship, and you know, people even questioned, friends of William's even questioned, you know, how he could be friends with me, because I was known as the dirty hypnotist, but he enjoyed what I had to say, and I definitely enjoyed what he had to say, and especially the way he taught. It wasn't about money, it was about opening up people's minds, yeah, teaching as many people and touching as many people's lives as possible. And you see that with everybody that's involved in it, from Jim Wan to Anthony Gailey's going to be here this year, Rich Guzzi that's been there, and I think he's going to be back again.
Yeah, Rich is definitely back. And Rich is another one who comes
Richard
from...
Richard Nongard.
Rich Guzzi is another one who comes from stand-up, right? I mean, he was another one... He injects so much humor into his stage hypnosis show.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the king of comedy clubs.
Yeah,
he's definitely the king of comedy clubs, and you know, a great showman, great salesman, a really good friend. If you get a chance to meet him and talk to him, you can definitely learn, and you definitely learn off a lot of people. Like Mike DeShalit is incredible. You know, he jokes around being a failed magician,
yes,
but I mean he's an incredible performer, and I mean he made that choice. It wasn't being a failed magician. A lot of magicians become hypnotists because they pack small and play large. You know, the biggest joke about it was I showed, you know, them a little pencil case. I said, that's my entire show right there.
Wow.
My music's all in there, and that's all I got to travel with. And whereas magicians would have to take two suitcases and and spend 2 hours pre-show just setting up and all that kind of stuff. But sorry, I sort of went off on a different tangent, but the one thing that you will know about Heartland Hypnosis, it doesn't matter what aspect of it you're coming into, is you will meet amazing people with amazing knowledge that are also willing to learn. I mean, part of the reason I'm there is to teach, and another part is I'm definitely open to learn and learn different concepts. And there's so many wonderful, amazing people that are willing to give that knowledge.
And I know that there are William Mitchell offers a stage internship, you know, for young hypnotists, people wanting to get into it and you know, wanting to do what you do. And he offers this internship.
Yeah.
Will you take any of those kids with you? You know,
oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I will, if Willem asks me to teach anyone or they want to travel with me, absolutely. I will definitely do that. The way William does it and the way he teaches, he wants to make sure that it's just not anybody off the street without knowledge and that just wants to learn. Cause I mean, I learned absolutely backwards. I learned to perform and be able to hypnotize people before I knew what I was doing with it. Whereas he wants to teach people and make them knowledgeable about being able to do clinical stuff as well and know what the mind's doing and how to treat human beings. And then moving on to the stage show. So the stage show is very, very professional and moralistic and clean. And it's not about making money. It's about teaching it the right way.
Do you see clinical people? I know you said you've helped friends with losing weight and stopping smoking and stuff. Have you ever had any kind of clinical base where you're working with people and their problems and helping them?
I have, and most of them, you know, they either live close by, and it's just about time. You know, me being on the road so much, I'd love to do a lot more because that's actually my soul cleansing. I make my money doing my shows, and I do well at it, and I love doing that because it never feels like work. But when I can help somebody and change somebody's life, you know, for the better, that's the soul cleansing of it. And that's what you'll experience, you know, coming through Heartland too, is just that wonderful feeling and that warmth and that family feeling that you'll get from everybody.
Yeah, it really
doesn't
is.
Matter if they're a first year, if they've been around like Jim Wan, who's been doing it for 30 plus years.
You mentioned Michael DeShalit earlier, and I interviewed Michael for last year. And during the interview, I mentioned that I had a fear of elevators, and it was literally just a small part of the interview. And I said, "Oh, I have a fear of elevators." Blah blah blah. And he was talking about how he would help people. And literally, when we got done with the interview, Michael was he said to me, he's like, "Hey, you know, personal question." He goes, "If you want some help with that, just get hold of me. I will help." You know what I mean? Offering. Because he was sure that he had a way to help me with the elevator problem. And by the way, eventually I did get hypnotized to help with that. But I thought it was just so nice of Michael, and literally didn't know me from anything, didn't know me from anyone other than our interview, and had offered to do that. I think that's just to show how kind that so many people, the kind of people that you were talking about, that's how they are, you know.
It is, and everybody checks their ego at the door.
Yeah,
and it becomes family the second you step in that door, and none of us look at each other as competition. We just look at each other as teachers and students, and most of us are both, because there's definitely things like people go, well, you know, you've done this for so long, you've been doing this for almost 25 years, or you've done 5,000 plus shows, but I wanted to sit down and listen to Michael DeShalit because he can teach me a ton of things that I don't know, or Brian Gilbert, who's amazing as well, and just different ways and different techniques. The techniques I learned was from one person originally, mm-hmm. Well, and I thought that was the holy grail of it, and, you know, finding out later that it wasn't.
When you and Brian, you're going to do an inductions class at Heartland, mm-hmm. You guys will... You'll be inducing people or talking about it. Give me some of the what we're expecting from that class.
Explanation of what rapid inductions are, when to use them, best ways to use them. And then both Brian and I, we have different techniques, so we trade off on different techniques. And we actually let and allow students to perform it. And we'll critique them and show them what they're doing, what they need to look for. So it's a hands-on approach. That you can walk away and you may learn 10 to 15 new different approaches on doing rapids and then figure out which ones work best for you.
Listen, I appreciate your time today. Salish, I asked you, I said it was only going to be a half an hour and we doubled that. But you're so fascinating and I really enjoyed talking to you. And yes, this is going to be available for Heartland Hypnosis Conference and let everybody know through that. But I'm also going to let my Facebook fans of my actual radio show and my other podcast, I'm going to make this available for them to listen to, because just as an entertainer, it was really fascinating to pick your brain a little bit and to talk about these things. I think you have a perspective that, you know, people from all different walks of entertainment and society in general, some of the stuff about you know, political correctness, and I'd never understand people who complain about political correctness. So you're basically saying the problem with America is we try not to act like an a-hole. That's the problem with it. And I'd never understand that argument. I really liked your take on that as well today. I've enjoyed the interview a lot.
Thank you. So have I. This has been absolutely great.
And listen, for those of you who are interested in hypnosis, or you're a hypnotist and you're listening to this, Heartland Hypnosis Conference is April 26th through 28th in St. Louis, Missouri. Go to heartlandhypnosisconference.com. Salesforce.com. And Salesh, if you were ever in town, because I know, like, well, you're in town for the Heartland Hypnosis Conference, but I know, like, sometimes William might give you a gig here or there if you're in the area. I want you to come on my actual radio show because you're a fascinating guy to talk to.
Oh, I would absolutely love it. And I think I'm supposed to be at Maryville University next year. They have a rotation that they've had me on, and they want to make sure their students never see the same person in the 4 years that they're there. So I think next year is my time. So definitely.
Ladies and gentlemen and people, he is Entertainer of the Year. He's a fantastic interview, and he is always one of the highlights of the Heartland Hypnosis Conference. It's Salesh joining me on Heartland Hypnosis Radio. I'm Ray Lytle. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you guys again soon.